Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Employer podcast, where we bring you thoughts, practical tips, and advice from progressive people, all in hopes to inspire you and many others to promote an even better employee experience, as well as support our businesses in achieving goals in style. In this episode, we'll explore what it means to be a transparent employer, and we will be speaking to experts in the area leading behind the transparent culture movement and people who have actually enabled transparency in their organization to offer you once again those much needed actual takeaway nuggets that you could implement as soon as you leave this podcast. So without further ado, today you will be hosted by me. I am Olya Yakshin. I'm the head of people at Switchy. And on the call with me, I have some special guests. So go on, guys, introduce yourselves. Let's start with Adam. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Olya. Hi, Thomas. Hi, everyone. I'm Adam. I'm one of the two co-founders at OpenOrg. We work with people and talent leaders and employers on helping to build more transparent workplaces with an ultimate goal of helping to elevate trust, engagement, and performance within teams. There's a couple of ways we do that. One of those being a workplace accreditation that we offer companies once working with them over a period of time. And we also run programs for individual people and talent folks as well, cohorts, boot camps, etc.
I think that's just such a valuable addition to the people community, OpenOrg, really. I've heard Thank so you. Many great things, and there is a good buzz around the topic, which is really great because, again, we want to be that catalyst of change for people and for their experience at work. And thank you so much, Adam, for joining us today. Thomas, hi.
Hi. Lovely to be Fiona here. My name's Thomas. I am the VP of People and Talent at a company called Juro. Juro is an intelligent contract automation platform. So if you've ever had issues with Word, email, workflows, just to get a single contract out, Juro can help with that. We're a relatively small company of about 90 people today. I joined the company around 15 and basically have kind of overseen the entire candidate and employee experience throughout that time, which has been coming up to just 4 years now. And transparency has always been like really baked into how we operate, which you, for example, can see in the public handbook that we have out there, which has a lot of resources for potential candidates, for example. And yeah, we recently have been on the journey with OpenOrg to get accredited as well. So super proud about that accreditation and really excited to talk about it more.
Thank you so much, Thomas. So, I mean, how did you even make that decision? Kind of what inspired you to even build a case for transparency?
It's an interesting one. So I fundamentally believe that, especially when you're in a small company, you're listening to this and you're part of, let's say, a startup or a scale up, a lot of how the company operates culture-wise, its everyday behaviors, it will come still from, you know, the founder. Who built the business. So, you know, we can talk a lot about, you know, how you create a business case and buy-in, et cetera, but the best business case will be that you have people at the top, you know, a founder, CEO, a leadership team, who fundamentally believe that in 2023, you cannot actually run a business that will be attractive to candidates or its employees, and that you won't be able to, you know, retain people healthily for the long term if you aren't being transparent in your business practices. That extends to, you know, a lot of areas. The one that most people tend to think of in the people community when they hear transparency is pay, right? And that's going to actually, you know, have, you know, legal standing at some point in the future. But it's really only the kind of like most sort of famous case. When you have people working for a business, they in a way subscribe to that business on a monthly recurring basis, a little bit like, you know, you would do with a subscription product. If that is what you do, then the only way that you can kind of in return continuously deliver value for people is by telling folks, okay, here's, you know, what we put out, right? Here's what you give us in terms of performance, but here's what we give you in return. And you will really only be able to do that by being really clear and having giving people visibility into For example, here's how the leadership team operates. Here's how we make decisions. Here is why we offer the benefits that we offer and not others. Here's what our general principle is on flexibility, et cetera, right? Transparency is really just a concise way of saying, tell people what you're going to do, tell people what you're doing when it's in the moment, tell them what you've done. And it is perfectly fine to say, we don't know. It's perfectly fine to say, we haven't thought about that yet, or we don't have enough information about that yet. People may agree or disagree, but they will never be able to fault you for not telling folks stuff.
I think, Adam, you have this open, fantastic case in Thomas, who already subscribes to those benefits of transparency. And I can imagine it was really easy to work with a client like this. From your experience, how do you support kind of other people, leaders, to come to that realization that transparency is just about telling people what you actually do? Transparency is something that is going to help you. Just talk to us a little bit about your experience with that notion.
Yeah, just quickly on Jira as well. You're right. It was it is a lot easier. You're starting from a much better place when you've got a company that's been very intentional about transparency from day one. Honestly, we went into that process thinking, how are we going to elevate and improve and find holes in this business? But it was amazing speaking to Thomas and the team from day one, despite them being gold standard as far as businesses go when it comes to transparency. They're an example of a company that said, we know we can do more, we want to do more, push us. And we did find some areas to elevate, which was really cool. But that support was always there from leadership as well. That's a very, very rare thing, I have to say. You're right, Olya, the majority of companies and leadership teams are not in that place yet. I have to say, the majority of people leaders are in that place. We speak to individuals within companies who say, I want to do more, I want to do this. I just don't necessarily have that support. And I also don't have necessarily a team around me to help do that. So sometimes you need a little bit more help building a business case and selling the benefits of transparency to leadership teams. There's a few reasons that it's an obvious win-win, and it does frustrate me sometimes that the word transparency immediately makes people jump to pay transparency, because it's not just about pay. Actually, pay is a very,
very scary, isn't it? It's just been such a taboo for so long that even having this word associated with it is making it a more difficult, scarier concept than it actually is.
John and I spend a heap of time working out how we can build OpenOrg without even using the word transparency, to be honest, because it makes people anxious. And I start hearing phrases like pay clarity instead of pay transparency, because that feels actually a lot better, to be honest. But transparency goes way, way deeper than pay. And it's so much more important. And anyone who is fans of like Patrick Lencioni and the dysfunctions of teams, et cetera, will know that first core level being trust. And transparency is that route to building trust within teams, which for us is an absolute core vital element in any company. And any leader that disagrees with that, I'd be incredibly worried about how successful they could ultimately become. Aside from being a core element of driving things like productivity, profitability, better retention in teams, ultimately it's what people want as well. And businesses shouldn't ignore that. There is business benefit to it, but it's also what employees want, what applicants want. Slack have run studies on this, big studies recently. Huge numbers of people have said in their next employer they are looking for more transparency. It was like 87% or something like that.
When do you want it? Now.
Yeah, 100%. It's the danger is it becomes a buzzword. It becomes something that companies just jump at. So the work that we're trying to do is not being there to be like a pay and display badge that companies can throw on a website. We're not with OpenOrg. We're not claiming that companies are great places to work. We're actually just claiming that whatever you read, whatever you see, whatever you're told is true. And we're actually encouraging companies to be honest about the fact that maybe their diversity isn't great, or maybe they're not doing brilliantly here, or maybe they're working on things here, or their career development framework is non-existent at the moment, but it's under construction. as long as you just tell people that, that builds trust. And that's really, really vital. So there's some key things that people leaders, if they're struggling to build business case around this, because they've maybe got more resistance in their leadership team, can go and read and understand. And I'm always around to soundboard with people on that as well.
I think it's true that for some businesses, because you have so many areas, don't you? Within that kind of transparency conversation, you come into the business and you assess it across all sorts of different levels, really. You can display transparency through different stages of that employment journey. And for some companies, maybe they're like slightly ashamed of some of their current practices, and they just don't wanna talk about it openly because they believe that they, you know, just will detract people from wanting to work there instead. And it's really hard to sort of sell that message sometimes. What if people are not gonna like me because, you know, I have a mole kind of thing.
some of the frustrations that have fed into us launching OpenOrg in the first place, John and I, are watching on over the years around like what's happening in the world of employer brand. And, you know, I hate this phrase and it's caused so many issues, but like the whole phrase of like war for talent has led companies to scramble to try and attract as many people as they possibly can, look as shiny and amazing as they possibly can to the outside world to try and attract people. You don't need to work any harder to attract people nowadays. There's so much technology, so much awareness out there to get people to come to you. You need to actually work harder to find the right people. And for us, it's about not just showing the shiny parts and the amazing parts, it's showing the entirety of EVP and what are we doing well and what should we be proud of. But also, FYI, these are the areas that we're working on. And what I think is powerful about that as well is that's, funny enough, what people actually get excited by. If they can see that you're aware diversity is not great, but you're making commitments to fix it and improve it, and someone really is big on diversity, they can spot an opportunity to come into that business and feel like they can actually make a change because it's being talked about rather than just being hidden. So being more vulnerable as a business is something that we talk about a lot. And then it's, again, you encourage people as employers to bring your whole selves to work nowadays and you know, be vulnerable and open up. And people encourage leaders and CEOs to be more vulnerable and open up and share failures. And we're trying to do that on an organizational level. And I think the same benefits will be seen there when you talk about building trust with not just your employees, but with potential employees as well.
There's something powerful too in, you know, seeing a careers page and a company not just writing on there, you know, here's what we offer, here's what we're working on, but also saying, this is what we're not offering and what we will never do, right? We're just not that kind of company that does X, Y, and Z. It might be scary as an exercise to kind of say like, look, this is what we don't do. And if you don't like that, this will not be the right place to you, for you. But if you say, think about this in sales terms, right? You qualify out leads or prospects when you're trying to get customers, because you know you will probably either not win them anyway, or if you do by overselling and not offering what it says on the tin, that customer will probably churn in the long run, or they will create a lot of pain for the customer success team. Maybe the product team will build the wrong things just to make that customer happy. It's a lot of wasted time and effort by trying to over-attract people. Fundamentally, what you are doing as an employer is creating a basic give-get relationship, right? The value proposition that that Adam referred to. You can really only do that by saying, here's what you get, here's what you don't get. If this is an attractive proposition to you, we will always uphold that and make sure that, you know, we continue to deliver for you. The point that Adam mentioned earlier around, you know, transparency really being clarity, this is really what that is. People think about transparency and they think of kind of some kind of glass human that, like, you know, you can see through like everything. And yes, there's kind of an element of that, just being vulnerable about what you do know and what you don't. But fundamentally, it is just what is kind of the entirety of this nebulous construct that you have, which is being an employer, as opposed to just selling a product, and then distilling that down into a couple of, you know, bullet points, sequences, sentences, sections, etc., that people can fundamentally very clearly understand to say, cool, this is what the company operates on. This is something I can always call back on. That is really, for lack of a better word, sexy to people. Mm-hmm. We found to actually have that quite clearly written out and over communicated to candidates, to employees, etc. People will always be able to make their own choices in that. They will appreciate they're being treated as adults, and it will in the end create a really loyal and engaged group of people for you. That said, that starts with vulnerability in the leadership team.
Yeah,
I think with some of that practical advice from you, Tom, like we have gone through this whole process of, as you said, like unpicking this transparent human and it making that from this whole kind of scary concept of, oh my god, there is all of this different transparency, we don't know where to start, with OpenOrg again. What I really liked is that you guys divided that transparency into these actionable sentences and actionable things, but there are so many of them, isn't there? Like 30 different areas, right?
We're on. We haven't actually launched this yet, but currently there's 30, but we've actually got 36. So there's hey, six like... ones coming down the track very soon, and that's what we love about this as well. Is like we haven't finished. We've got this framework that we've identified and built, but actually that's not the end. You know, we're going to keep identifying new interesting areas that become apparent within a business where we realize this is really important to applicants and to employees. I can give you one of the new ones if you're interested very quickly as an example.
Go ahead, sneak peek, everyone.
One of the 30 areas we've got at the moment, which you'll probably be both very familiar with, is onboarding. And actually, this wasn't our idea, but someone the other day said, what about offboarding? And it was just this light bulb moment. I just thought, what about, like, why not? And this it's really interesting that companies don't talk enough about how they deal with offboarding employees as well. And that's really powerful. And when we started digging into that afterwards, very quickly found four or five companies who are well-known companies with handbooks publicly, etc. And they've got sections that dedicate themselves to talking about how they offboard employees. And it might seem like a small detail, but it tells you so much about how a business treats people and handles people. And why not? Why not add that as an extra achievement? So that's one of these extra ones that will be coming down the track next year. And we've got a handful of others that are really cool too.
Very interesting. I think it's just this whole thing of like, you don't want to show your turnover rate as well, because you don't want to show it in case you are worried that that's too many people churning. and you kind of don't really know what good looks like either, because again, I know that there is some benchmarking stuff. We're looking at metrics in the future and maybe trying to really understand for my company size, what sort of turnover rate is this and that. But in general, it's kind of, no, nobody's churning. Everybody's super happy here. Once you join, you're staying here forever. Mm. And even at the onboarding stages, you're like, this is all you need to know. And the people in the action, this is what I noticed after myself, for full disclosure. This is what you do. Once you join, this is when you get paid. This is all the things. This is the fire exit. And, you know, these are the things that you can read through if you decide to leave us, which obviously you will never. So it's just kind of, it's not something people talk about quite so openly, even through the induction processes, or, you know, maybe I don't and I should. So again, so many different areas. Thomas, how did you approach it? And can you give people some practical tips on, if they wanted to go through the accreditation with OpenOrg, how could they start? How could they make it a success? How could they, you know, get the best out of it and start with the right foot? What would your advice be?
Absolutely, yeah. Just to come back on the point that you just mentioned on, you know, not sharing turnover rates. It's funny because we actually recently redid our kind of onboarding materials when it comes to anything people and talent does. Sharing our regrettable turnover rate is actually part of that. Onboarding is one of the top metrics that we track as a proxy for, are we creating a healthy org? Because ultimately, if we have people that we don't want to leave are not leaving, we're always very open that, like, we want that rate to be about under 5% or a 6-month rolling basis. And that, you know, we've consistently achieved, but that, you know, also means that there will be some people who are expected to leave that we will just not be able to retain, because we're a company of like 90 people and not everything's perfect, right? But assuming that there's, you know, that in there, people tend to respect that quite a lot, saying that, yeah, okay, fair enough. I, you know, understand that, you know, you're still building. That's kind of what I signed up for when I'm in a startup. And again, it's this, you know, it's this absolute crystal clarity to say, well, you know, we don't expect people to stay here forever. What we expect people is to do great, meaningful, sustainable work for, you know, as long as you grow with the business and the business grows with you. Once that balance is no longer there, you know, be on your way, and you will have great experiences, you know, from the company if you outgrow the company or the company outgrows you. That is something that everybody knows in the back of their head. It's not like you kind of want to brush over that as kind of a taboo topic. So that just kind of on that part, because it got me thinking. In terms of practical advice for OpenOrc, I think when we went through the accreditation, obviously, you know, the thing that this accreditation is fundamentally is a blueprint for where are your white spots on your own map for, you know, clarity, and where are you unclear. And you can, from there, really do three things that I found have worked really well. Number one is pick your battles. So, you know, 30, 36 topics, you know, way too many to work on at the same time, right? So you get a certain accreditation off to a certain level based on like how good you are. We decided to pick maximum two topics at a time to work on, and no more. There's a huge, I think, risk, particularly in startups, where you have so many things to fix all at the same time. It is very easy to lose focus, and simply limiting yourself in terms of sheer quantity is already kind of one thing that helps you retain that focus. The second thing that I would say is, you know, stay authentic. So prioritize which two things you pick on based on what just already aligns naturally with your culture. One practical example: at Juro, we've always operated on choice first work approach, which means that from day one, you can come into our London hub if you like live near. You don't have to. We will never expect anybody to come into the office for anything other than, you know, maybe like a big company retreat or something like that. There's basically no requirement for anybody to be in a certain place. That is fundamentally what choice first work means. And that was a really easy one for us to pick as a low hanging fruit, because one thing that wasn't mentioned in there is flexibility when it comes to working hours, right? We're very flexible with that, but we've never actually made that clear on the page, which OpenOrc very now clearly kind of uncovered for us, right? So that is an easy thing and a quick win to say, cool, we can make that clearer and people will appreciate it. Third bit is be realistic with what you can achieve. So going back to the bit that Adam kind of called out, you know, pay transparency as being a very scary term. You know, don't try and, you know, panic and go, oh my God, like we have nothing. And now we need salary bands, we need to be transparent with those bands. And like, everybody needs to be like benchmarked against those bands. It's a lot of work to do. And also as a company, where you fall on a kind of transparency spectrum might be different to another company. And that is totally fine. Small iterations celebrated over time are way better than trying to deliver one massive piece of work. If you continuously put out small little like units of value, your team will see that you are in fact making and staying true to a public commitment inside the company for increasing steadily the transparency, the clarity of what your org does. And that's how we've, you know, approached the accreditation, and that is how we will kind of increase over time, slow and steady, kind of how we stand up to the standards that OpenOrc have set. That involves work. That work we map out on a people roadmap, but it is something that just really is consistently we've committed to taking up about, you know, 10 to 20% of our workload.
I mean, just jump in very quickly there, actually, because I think that's spot on. And this is a conversation we have with a lot of companies. I haven't met a people team or a people person yet who isn't constantly busy. There's always something on the roadmap. There's always something to get done. There's always fires to fight. And there's a lot of conversations we have with people leaders who say, this looks great. I just don't know when I can't do all this right now. And the message we try and send is the same as what Thomas has actually just said there is, you don't, it's not a race to the finish. It's not a sprint. This is a very long-term journey. And actually it's much better for you to tackle tiny bits at a time, but make the commitment to start if it really is interesting to you. And take a couple of things at a time. It might take you 9 months, 12 months to get to the point where you really are happy to be accredited, or it might be sooner. But if you keep pushing it off, then it, the impact won't be felt. So not rushing it and actually taking it in bite-sized chunks is really important. And that's sort of how we've designed it as a roadmap for and a blueprint for people as well. And the other point I always try and make is this isn't Pokemon. You're not going out to try and achieve every single of those 30 or 36 achievements. And any company that did, I would probably be a little bit sort of skeptical about to a degree, unless they've been very intentional for a very long time. You look at like a GitLab or something like that. So don't feel like you have to go and achieve every single one. And that speaks to Thomas's point about staying authentic, looking inwardly at your culture, what fits naturally for you, what works. And if there's anything that doesn't, that's fine. That's like, we're not trying to get companies to prescribe to a certain level of transparency here. It's got to be contextual to what works for your business as well.
I think just from my own reflection of what Switchy had to go through, it is really true that, you know, you just look at what you've already been doing for a long time. You just look at, you reflect back on some of the OKRs you've been working on, and you're like, actually, I have been working a lot on career development frameworks, but do I explain to new starters, do I explain to potential candidates what it is like? I have all of the internal documentation, everybody knows what it's about, but I don't talk about it openly. And it's going through this accreditation that I kept asking myself this question of, well, why don't I talk about this openly? What do I have to hide? and it is interesting to kind of ask yourself these questions. Why don't I talk about it? Because if there is no reason not to, if your leadership team is not blocking you on kind of shouting out about some of the internal work you've been doing, it could be a good opportunity. So just the one other practical tip I would add from my own journey is that chances are that you may already be doing some of this stuff. And the accreditation through Open Org, for example, it allows you to enter into some of those transparency categories at different levels. So you can sort of just recognize at which level you are now, and is it difficult, or how long would it take you to get onto this one tiny level higher? And does it make sense for you? So just like Thomas said before, you pick a couple of topics maximum based on your bandwidth, based on how big your team is, and you just like chisel at it slowly over time until you get to the place that you yourself are happy with, that it actually reflects your current state of play in the business. And of course, this is something that is always going to be ongoing, and iterations will always be made. So the fact that you are at a certain score right now is not a reflection of your company for the rest of time. You can always keep working on this. You can always keep building on that and make it better. That's been super helpful so far. Thank you so much, Adam and Thomas, for this conversation. I feel like even I'm learning a lot. I've been through this, but I hope that it is also something that's really valuable for everybody who is listening to us today. I think when I first started going through this, I was thinking, what would it be like when everybody sees the transparency we're offering here? What kind of impact would it actually bring? What ROI will it actually bring? How can I explain to the team that doing all of those things is good for us? And, you know, have you noticed any kind of tangible impact so far, Thomas, on your team after you sort of launched the accreditation and said, look, somebody else, a third party, assured us that we are what we say we are? Kind of, what was it like for you?
So it wasn't a big surprise to our teams, because you typically aren't a company that doesn't do any of this stuff. And then, like, surprise, actually, we're super transparent, right? That's typically not how it works. That accreditation is usually the beginning of a journey to formalize the clarity, the transparency that you as an organization bring. So the kind of feedback that we've received internally, externally, is, I don't know how else to say it other than a very positive shoulder shrug, as in, that's really cool. We knew that. And it's great that we continue investing in that. As for the kind of the ROI, I am a very metrics driven person. I try to go really like very high from, you know, top level metrics that investors will care about, when that people in talent can influence, like ARR per employee in our case, then kind of seeing into like metrics that influence this, right? Things like NPS, turnover rates, any of those metrics. But I think there's a bit of a misconception sometimes that every single thing you do needs to have a specific like number attached to it that it immediately impacts. The nature of people and talent is sometimes that it works a bit indirectly, right? The quickest logic that I would make is that if you invest in making work more transparent, what it will do in the short term is it will enable people to work better together, because there's less friction. People work better together. You'll have a lot of smart people making better decisions and being able to execute better, which in turn will impact your revenue. Now, that is an indirect kind of stream of impact, which, you know, means that you won't have like a transparency score that like instantly correlates with revenue. Although that is something that you could, you know, think about. There's a lot of pioneering work going on in people and talent. Over the medium to long term, what I would say is that if you as a company embark on you know, this journey of getting accredited and, you know, committing to a roadmap to what are you going to do to improve it, I would look at what happens to your particularly regrettable turnover rate over time. There might be something that happens that maybe it like increases a little bit, because people are like, oh, okay, I wasn't actually that clear on like what this company stands for and not. And I'm like deciding, is that for me or isn't it? But if you consistently do that, your regrettable turnover rate will probably go quite consistently down over time. That is a long burn game, right? So you won't be able to use it if you want to kind of make a case for like, we do this and then in 2 months we will have all the candidates flooding to our careers page. Although I would probably say there will be a boost that you're getting from it.
Yeah, I just quickly jump in on that. Weirdly, very happy to hear that, like the way you described it is like a positive shoulder shrug, because the open org is not meant to be this sort of big whoop and holler PR exercise. That's going to create like this short-term burst of like happiness and excitement. This is a deeper sort of cultural impact that we hope for businesses. Some less immediate surprise, like a Duro, like a Switchy, I'm sure as well, in that, yep, we know this, we knew it already. Others will have already been on a journey, communicating that journey for a number of months still anyway, because our accreditation isn't like an overnight pay and display thing as well, that will suddenly be a surprise to employees. The employees will have known that you're working on it for a period of time, usually 3 months on average, and so they'll know that this is coming. And one of the things we do, a bit like a B Corp actually, is offer like a pending type accreditation status to companies, so that they can still signal, hey, we're working on this, it's going to take some time, we're on the journey, but you'll know about it when we finally achieved it. And hopefully, if they're embracing open org properly, the communication with employees will be there throughout the journey as well. But it's a head nod, it's an achievement still to be able to earn that at the end, and ultimately a mark of accountability, which is the key thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And something that I would also suggest, you know, if you are, and I'm talking to you all listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us. What I am trying to give some advice on is just the metrics that you already have. So it is possible that you would already have some metrics around employee engagement scores, maybe around your time to hire, maybe around your turnover, maybe, you know, around your retention, things like that. And you would be able to track, you know, over time, over the last 2 years or something, depending on how long you've been taking these that data in, that at any kind of significant points in time, you might have certain spikes or troughs in those in that data, and then you can see, hopefully, putting all of those different metrics together, what actually some of the things that you are doing in the company, what do they actually have an impact on? And it could be that you're not just going to have clear impact on only one metric. It could be that as a result of some actions, you would have multiple metrics behave in a certain way altogether, and you might see that as a more significant kind of indicator that something actually has been transformational for your culture there. Personally, switch again, I've just noticed people visibly more excited and just proud about working here. They have been talking about, you know, how cool it is that we were, for example, the first B Corp company in England in our sector, and now being kind of the first third-party recognized transparent culture company in our sector. I think it's just a good, again, good attraction factor if you're fighting for some top talent in your sector as well. So this is something that I would add on this. So thank you so much, Thomas and Adam, for this episode. Just to summarize, what we've been going through today was just how important it is really to look within and self-reflect on the current practices that you have, because chances are you are already on a journey of some transparency there, and it is important to recognize and give yourself a pat on the back for some of the fantastic work you've already been doing. Chances are, again, if you are listening to this podcast, that you are that progressive people person who really wants to move the needle, who really wants to give your people something better than they've had before. And so, how can you help yourself build this case for transparency? We've had Thomas and Adam both talking to us about this and what are some of the important things to have a look at. We've also talked through the actual open org accreditation itself and some practical tips and advice for you for how you might go about that, and what sort of impact you can expect on your teams and your metrics following an announcement like this to the rest of the business. So thank you so much, guys, for the time that you have invested in this today. And I'm just so excited to keep chatting with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always been awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, and we will see you in the next episode of the Modern Employer Podcast. Goodbye.